Now, by way of concluding the commentary on Mark, I want you just to reflect on the gospel. First, I have some statements I've written out, and I'll read them and comment on them briefly. First remark, by common consent, Mark is the earliest complete account in writing of the account of the life, the actions, and the true identity of Jesus Christ. He's the oldest gospel. He established this literary genre of Evangelion, the good news, the gospel. And he starts off his gospel with that phrase. Which is very interesting. I should have thought of that one before and saved a few minutes, but it's very interesting. Our key to Evangeliu Jesu Christu, the beginning of the Evangelium, the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, Son of God, as it is written in Isaiah the prophet. And we start right from the beginning, the account of John the Baptist, already foretold, as it were, that there would be a messenger who would go ahead of him. And as there was an Evangelion, an angel went ahead of the Jewish people in the desert. And now it will be this one who goes ahead of you. And he is a voice sounding in the wilderness. All of that literally, you know, word by word, taken from Isaiah 40, verse 3 and following. Okay. So that's the way Mark begins his gospel. This is the arche, the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, Son of God. Some manuscripts have it, some don't. As it is written in Isaiah the prophet, behold, I send my messenger, my angel, ahead of your face. Now, this is John the Baptist. And so the story begins with John the Baptist, okay? And it is the earliest complete account. It reflects, if you will, the standard manner in which the reality of Jesus was and is mediated by casting into writing the manner in which the facts and life incidents of Jesus, as well as his death and resurrection, were being handed on to believers for their own understanding and growth in union with Jesus. In other words, this was the regular way, more or less, the stock way of telling people about Jesus, was to start with the fulfillment of the promises, or at least a promise, as here in Mark. You see, and it was done as an aid to those who were coming close to Jesus, and so that they could love him and spread the news about him. So that's what the Evangelia are all about. You notice that's why the Pope, in his latest writing, entitles it what? Evangelii Gaudium, huh? The joy of the good news. And this is the good news. Now, the second remark I want to make, it reflects the standard manner, if you will, in which the reality of Jesus was and is mediated by casting into writing the manner in which the fact and life give facts and life-giving incidents of Jesus, as well as his death and resurrection, were being handed on to the believer for their own understanding and growth in union with Jesus, as an aid to those who were approaching Jesus in order to be close to him, love him, and spread the news about him. That's why it was written down. And what was written down? The good news. And what's the good news? It's right there in the beginning of Isaiah. This good news was prophesied. And so that's the another reflection I want to make. Thus, the original context for the oral and written composition of the account of Jesus' words and deeds was the meeting of Christian communities to celebrate the memorial and the presence of Jesus in their midst in a context of Eucharistic observance and celebration. The native home of the Evangelion is the Eucharistic liturgy. We should never forget that. And as the document on the liturgy from Vatican II said, you know, when the word, particularly the gospel, is read out, it is still Christ proclaiming his gospel. So that when the gospel of Mark or Matthew or Luke or John is read out, it is still Christ proclaiming his gospel through the heart and mind and voice of somebody else. But it is Christ. Thus, the original context for the oral and written composition of the account of Jesus' words and deeds was the meeting of Christian communities to celebrate the memorial. This is beautifully handled and taught in a book by Farkas Falvey. Dennis. Is it Dennis Farkas Falvey? Yes. Cistercian Abbot. And I've forgotten the title of it. But if you look up Farkas Falvey, you can look that up. It's just Farkas Falvey. And it's a beautiful book. You see, that's the original context for both the oral and the written composition of the account of Jesus' words and deeds. And that was the meeting of the Christian communities to celebrate the memorial and the presence of Jesus in their midst in the context of Eucharistic observance and celebration. That's where it was preached, spoken about, taught, and written down. Mark seems to have been the first to make of this material a complete narrative account that memorialized the life, words, and actions of Jesus and strung this material along a one-time travel account. You've all noticed, I'm sure, whereas in John, Jesus goes back and forth three times to Jerusalem. In Mark, and then Luke and Matthew and Luke, there's only one trip to Jerusalem. That's the way Matthew structured his gospel along his one journey. And so, but it was done in the context of a Eucharistic observance and celebration. My next statement, I wrote these out so that I could be brief. Mark seems to have been the first to make of this material a complete narrative account that memorialized the words, the life, and the actions of Jesus. And as I already said, and strung this material along a one-time travel account. Now that's surely stylistic. Our Lord, and as John witnesses, made at least three trips, three pilgrimages to Jerusalem, as did every devout Jew. But this narrative, which is a theological framework for recording some of the incidents in Jesus' life, was brought about by stringing them along one travel account that took Jesus from north to south, from Galilee to Jerusalem. Now that is a literary structuring of the account. It's not strictly historical, because many of these events happened on other trips to Jerusalem. This was accomplished not without some attention to the chronological and geographical framework of his life. This was done by presenting a narrative journey from Galilee to Judea, and ultimately to Jerusalem and its temple, and thence to Calvary and the Garden Tomb. Mark structured the whole reality of Jesus along a literary travel account, which embraced probably at least three trips to Jerusalem of Jesus as an adult. He went as a child, he went with his mother and father. Now this is followed in Mark by an enigmatic narrative of the experience of the ointment bearing, the meriphores, if they're called in Greek, the women and their meeting with Jesus, now risen from the dead, and perhaps as well an account of the disciples meeting with Jesus. That seems to have been the basic. And Mark structured all that along one trip from the north to the south, and Matthew and Luke followed that structure. They elaborated on it, they had other material, and so forth. But that's the way that it goes. Huh? And so the Gospels, beginning with that by Mark, and along with a large part of the Old Testament, are made up of words of Jesus and narrative of his deeds. Their style, and Mark sets this as a standard for the other two synoptics, is basically narrative. And I want to spend the last few minutes we have here discussing that. See, narrative is the literary presentation of a completed action. He went out of the room and slammed the door. That's a narrative. It's not really, it's too short, but it, you see? Mark is outstanding in that his account of the good news is predominantly narrative. Actions speak louder than words. Now, I want to try to give you a feel for this narrative. Narrative makes the reality more present. Suppose I tell you St. Catherine of Siena was a very holy woman with great zeal to save souls. She was also uncommonly chaste. Now, she heard about, and I stopped. I stopped there. You said, that's very good. I'm glad to hear about that. Now, instead of making those chronological abstract statements, I give you a narrative. I say, there was a young man in jail, having been condemned to death for murder. And Catherine used to go and visit him. And he mocked her. He made fun of her. What are you coming here for? You think you're going to change me? Blah, blah, blah. And she never stopped going. And so then, the day that of his... he was going to be beheaded. In those days, the beheading of a criminal was like the NFL today, you know. It's the closest you can get to violence and blood and still be within the parameters of what's socially acceptable. And so she walked with him to the scaffold and then walked up with him. Now, can you imagine the jibes along the way? Hey, is that your new girlfriend? I mean, she paid no attention. She just kept right on going. Then, as he put his head on the block, he got very frightened. So Catherine went up onto the scaffold, and she held his head against her breast to console and strengthen him. And it was like that that his head was cut off. And he died, therefore, in peace, offering his death in atonement for his sins. Now, don't you know something more about Catherine when I tell you that story and mediate to you her actions rather than just the abstract description? Yes, of course. And that's why most of the Bible is narrative, because it's that way that we catch a glimpse of God. And in the Gospels of Jesus, they are narratives. And that's why the Gospels are mostly narrative, and they will embody the teaching as well.